Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Maglum, the Westward Warlock. Truth cuts deeper.
Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Chapter 42, Tyrion 6 of A Game of Thrones, and in Fire and Blood we are discussing the Sons of the Dragon.
Yeah.
So, kind of a long Sons of the Dragon, my
it
friend.
It is. So, I listened to it, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is the same thing as the novella, and I am, like, 90% sure that it is. And the tipping point for me, Sir Ezra, was something we noticed when we did the Sons of the Dragon as our Patreon episode, was, if you remember, all the way back in World of Ice and Fire, they talked about the crown that King Maegor wears, right? And he wears the same Valyrian steel crown as Aegon the Conqueror. But in Sons of the Dragon, in the novella, the old version that was in that Book of Swords a couple years, or you know, a year ago or two, right?
Yeah.
They referred to it as an iron crown, and we both looked at each other and we were like, what?
Yeah, what's up with that? Yeah.
What's up with that? And then they said it again in this one. So that was when I knew. Oh, it's the same. It is without question the same thing. So.
Yeah, because it was kind of like, was that a correction or?
I think it was like a misprint because Sons of the Dragon. I don't know exactly who wrote it, but it was published in that other book, the Book of Swords, the whole thing, or maybe it's just a different telling from Archmaester Gildane, right? You know, you have different kind of people. Writing these histories, you know, in the context of the world. So I don't know. We'll get to it, but just interesting. Yeah.
Remind me when we get there too, to go over some of the inconsistencies, as you said, and that might help us point to some of the differences between, you know, Fire and Blood and A World of Ice and Fire and the Book of Swords, you know, all that good stuff. So,
yeah.
But, all right, man. How you doing? You doing all right?
Hey man, I'm good. You know, I've been doing a ton of research, doing some deep rabbit hole research, some stuff I didn't even really know was like theories, stuff. Mm-hmm. I had to scour online on Reddit, and there's not even a lot of talk. So, I kind of hit Sir Ezra with this. I texted him the other day. I said, "Hey, did you know about this?" And he was like, "Yeah, no." And so, yeah, we have something that we're going to record after we do this episode. So keep an eye out for that, maybe on Patreon or maybe on the regular feed. Haven't decided yet.
We owe people's, you know, I mean, Christmas is right around the corner.
It's true.
You know, so, you know, it's the holidays. Yeah.
Tis the season. So
winter has come.
Yeah, that's true. Right?
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sergio, I think we're just gonna go ahead and dive right in. If you're,
I'm down with that.
Yeah, if you're ready. So, okay, let's go ahead and head on over to Small Council. Not a lot of big news right now. You know, we had that teaser trailer last week. There is the calendar we talked about a little bit last week. It's kind of cool. The 2020 Game of Thrones calendar Ger posted on his not a blog. You can check it out. You can see that kind of Ice Spider picture, which I think is cool. Gwendolyn Christie, who plays Brienne of Tarth, had said in the news that you are going to need therapy after you watch the final episode of Game of Thrones.
Seriously?
Yeah, everyone really seems to be hyping the last episode and the ending. So, yeah, bittersweet, you know.
Okay.
Maybe she says that because she dies. Maybe Bran of Tarth dies.
I mean, I actually could see that. I could see that happening.
Yeah,
you know. I'm actually kind of worried. I think what that means is that a lot of folks are going to die. You know, I mean, we might not be left with very many people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think that's
a therapy session. You know, it's like all of your favorites, because we all have a favorite. You know, they're dead. So yeah.
Well, that's how the show works. So
yeah, exactly. Well, and I mean, so if you want to surprise us now, I mean, like you know, more would live than die. I guess is the surprise.
Yeah, if you really want to shock us, everyone lives.
Yeah, and then we'd be disappointed. You know, we'd be like, "This is ridiculous. Well, that was stupid." You know?
So, some other news was Game of Thrones was the most, even without a new season, it is still the most watched show on demand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 2018 reports are showing.
That's good for us because, you know, we're us being, you know, a book club and also, you know, real show heavy as well. I mean, that's good. People are gearing up, you know. I mean, they're gearing up for the last season. I mean, I'm kind of a binger now anymore. I didn't used to be, but like I sometimes will wait, you know, for a whole series to come out or to finish, and I'm like, "All right, is it done?" You know, 3 years later, is it done? Let me go, you know, check it out.
Yeah, let me go. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things. It was one of the issues I kind of have with Netflix is Netflix has all these new shows, and some of them I think look pretty cool, but they're like one or two seasons long, and it's like, well, I'm not going to watch that and then wait around.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We've got The Song of Ice and Fire to read, man.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
We don't have time for that.
Yeah, I don't have time for that. Those other shows. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, Sir Ezra, I say we just go ahead and move on over to the Maester study because it is a long one today.
Yeah, it's thick. You know,
it's long. It's thick.
Straight.
Sometimes it's a little hard.
It's something else.
Right.
Well, and you know, we're talking about the Sons of the Dragon, which is fitting. So, where to start, my friend?
So, as we said, this is kind of the same thing as the novella, and which is awesome that it's in Fire and Blood. I mean, it's an enormous chapter. It's super cool. It details the lives of, the sons of Aegon the Conqueror. You have Aenys and Maegor, both become kings, but both sons are born of different wives of Aegon. So you have Aenys is born to Rhaenys Targaryen, and you have Maegor, who is the daughter, or he's the son of Visenya Targaryen. So there's definitely some succession issues there. Because, you know, should Aenys be the heir apparent with, you know?
Well, yeah, so.
Because
so,
Visenya, well, Visenya is the oldest of the Targaryens, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's that, you know, and then Aenys is actually, you know, I mean, for being such a weak, you know, kind of like child. Mm-hmm. Because that was one of the things, right? So he's kind of weak. He's got these watery eyes. His mom dies when he's three. You know, he starts crawling again. Very different from Maegor. He ends up having this fruitful, you know, marriage. You know, he's just popping out kids left and right.
Yeah.
And so the question starts to be like, okay, Maegor, now his brother, was next in line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then here comes kid one. Here's kid two, three, and four. And so the debate now, you know, is underway as to who is next up. Is it going to be his daughter, which I think is Rhaena, Targaryen, or is it going to be Maegor?
You know? Yeah, so because right away, yeah, cause at this time, you know, you have to remember that the laws and the customs, we haven't had the Great Council yet, so women could theoretically still become could become king, right, or queen, and you know, the ruler of the seven kingdoms. I'm surprised that Visenya herself didn't get somewhat of a claim or an argument.
There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't. That's a really good point.
Because she's not only, she's not only the wife of Aegon the Conqueror. She is also Aegon the Conqueror's older sister. And she did, she was just as involved in that conquering. Now, you know, as we progress, you could say, well, she's a woman. They don't have that line of succession once you have that council of 100 or 101 or whatever it is.
Yeah, 101. Yeah.
But at the time, she theoretically could have that claim. And also, I'm just thinking that she is also of that line with Aegon the Conqueror, and she's also a very fierce warrior, a dragon rider. Obviously, she's gonna be a little bit older when that comes about, and we'll get to all that. But definitely some interesting questions to think about.
Well, so if Visenya were to take the throne over any of their children first, you know,
right.
which we know can happen, like as a regent, right? You know, mm-hmm. they can kind of just sit on the throne until the heirs are, you know, come of age or whatever. It gets a little tricky because, right, he has two wives, he's got two sisters, but let's just say that it's just Visenya and him. Because he dies, she could actually technically remarry. She could actually remarry and have more kids. So then, you know, once she does essentially pass on, it would go to, you know, Aegon's firstborn son still, you would imagine, right? I mean,
right.
So I don't know. And also, what would have happened if Aegon would have just had, you know, a daughter, like an elder daughter, and then, you know, a son? So you get kind of, I mean, Ger kind of takes the easy route here in that, like, there's firstborn sons are just a thing, you know, out the gate here for these two guys. And then, is it Jaehaerys? Who all of his kids die, and he has to look to, like, a granddaughter or a grandson.
Right.
You know, so that's when that 101 council kind of becomes a big deal. Otherwise, we could have been having that debate, you know, much, much sooner. So,
yeah. And, you know, the other interesting thing is, right, so up until this point, right, you had all the kings of Westeros, right, all the different kingdoms. Aegon the Conqueror comes in, makes it pretty much seven kingdoms, right, with the exception of Dorne-ish. You know, Dorne is kind of doing their own thing, but at least they're not really feuding anymore. And once he dies, that battle for the power, the claim of the throne starts immediately, right?
Yeah.
So what ends up happening, right, you know, is Aenys becomes king, which we've talked about both in our World of Ice and Fire discussion and on Patreon. We did a huge, I think it was like a 3-episode breakdown of Sons of the Dragon. Yeah, Black Council. Yeah. So you get that you get Aenys' reign as a king. He's not really the greatest king. He has a hard time with a lot of the lords. They kind of, you know, view him as kind of as weak and feeble, which he kind of is. He feuds a bit with his brother. And he's also not a warrior, and that doesn't help him.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And one thing I want to point out, too, is that, like, the feuding, I think, starts with his brother almost right away when Aenys has his first child, Rhaena, because Visenya, you know, Maegor's mother, tries to wed or betroth, you know, Maegor to Aenys' daughter. So it would be, you know, was it niece to uncle? You know, that was sort of the
situation. Yeah, how weird, how gross and weird is that, huh? I guess we just want, like, you know, nieces and uncles and, you know, aunts and nephews hooking up. Is that what we want in a World of Ice and Fire? Yeah, I guess.
I mean, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It actually
is. I know it is. I know. I know.
It's what we want.
Yeah. It is actually totally what we want. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Which is great. But, you know, that was sort of a big issue. One thing, when we first started reading Sons of the Dragon, you can't help but notice that they put a lot of emphasis on Aegon the Conqueror mending things with the faith, you know. And neat little reference to Valyria, kind of the history there, just that there was thousands of religions, you know, but none that was feared above all others, you know, none that was,
right,
you know, proclaimed to sort of be the end all be all faith or religion, because, you know, in Westeros you have, you know, you've got the old gods, you've got the seven, and then you've got out there on Pike, you've got all that craziness going on out there. So, you know, yeah, they really are, the most of the kingdoms are tied to the seven, you know. So the High Septon is kind of a big deal, and he's the one who is spreading all this, you know, animosity towards the Targaryens in regards to their marriages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the two brothers lucked out because they each end up having to take, they have no sisters to marry, and then apparently no close, I guess, Aenys marries his cousin, correct? I mean, I think that he ends up marrying his cousin.
Yeah, I think so.
Alyssa Velaryon. So he ends up marrying her. So they're distantly kind of related. I think, like, one of the Velaryons married a Targaryen before Aegon the Conqueror, type of thing. So, because remember, I mean, you've got Aegon there, but you had other, I mean, you know, before him, you had this family. They had been on Dragonstone for quite some time, and had made some alliances, and probably had situations where they had to marry outside of the family, you know. So, mm-hmm. But okay. So yeah. Anyways, I just wanted to bring that up as some of the animosity that Sir Matt was kind of talking about with the faith, because really you get a faith militant uprising eventually, you know, like during Aenys' reign, you know, which was sort of a big deal, and he wasn't able to kind of handle a lot of that. So, you know, and that's sort of leading to some of the just troubles and woes that he has. Prince Maegor, you know, he ends up actually getting betrothed to, was it a Hightower at first? Because he has several
wives. He has several wives, and he never has kids. Well, he never has kids that really live. So his line, actually, the Visenya's line dies out.
Because he has, like, yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, I forgot.
He's like, he struggles to have kids. Like, and then you have Aenys, who's, mm-hmm. you know, popping them.
Yeah,
know,
having all sorts of kids. Yeah.
Yeah, his wife's popping them, you know, like they're Tic Tacs or something. And yeah. And then these kids left and right.
Right, right. Yeah, so Cerys Hightower, actually. So I remember, yeah, because Aegon the Conqueror was trying to still mend that whole situation with Old Town and the Faith, and so the Hightowers are a big deal there. And so he actually, you know, makes that sort of betrothal happen, that marriage happen. And so, you know, Maegor, like, what's he say? He consummates the marriage, like, you know, I don't know, over 10 times or 20 times or whatever. So just saying, he, you know.
Right.
He was a lusty, you know, was he 16? How old was he? She was like 10 years older than him, I think, or something.
Right.
Is what the text was saying.
Right.
So,
yeah. So anyway, so I have some of the lines here. So, let's see here. I want to pull this up.
You reading from Fire and Blood?
No, I have this. Well, it's Sons of the Dragon. It's just, you know,
yeah, okay,
it's
yeah.
same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me read this. The dragon was survived by his sister, Visenya, his sons Aenys and Maegor, and five grandchildren. Prince Aenys was 30 years of age at his father's death. Prince Maegor, 20, or 5 and 20. Aenys had been at Highgarden on his progress when his father died, but Quicksilver returned him to Dragonstone for the funeral. Afterward, he donned his father's iron and ruby crown. And Grand Maester Gawain proclaimed him Aenys of House Targaryen, the first of his name, King of the Andals, the first man, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms, Protector of the Realm. The Lords and Knight and Septim, who had come to Dragonstone to bid their king farewell, knelt and bowed their heads. When Prince Maegor's turn came, Aenys drew him back to his feet, kissed him on the cheek, and said, "Brother, you never need to kneel to me again. We shall rule this realm together, you and I." Then the king presented his father's sword, Blackfyre, to his brother, saying, "You are more fit to bear this blade than me. Wield it in my service, and I shall be content." Mm-hmm. There's a part later where he has Blackfyre, and then Visenya gives him Dark Sister. So he has both swords.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think he ends up, once he gets Blackfyre, I'd have to check on that. Does he give Dark Sister back to his mother? You know? Because it's still a player later on. We'll have to check here real quick. Because, yeah, I forgot that, because I had just read where you know, from time to time, the Conqueror would press Blackfyre into Aenys' hands, and then Maegor grew up with Dark Sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the King's Sword is a big deal.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, you know, another thing we can talk about here too with Aenys, I mean, because we had to get through both brothers here, just some of this dissension here, I guess. Well, one thing that's kind of neat to talk about is Rhaena. One thing I noticed when I was reading Fire and Blood, did you get the impression? Let me just open her tab up here real quick. Rhaena, so Aegon, he weeps a couple times, you know, when he first sees his granddaughter. I mean, he's just sort of, no, it's not Rhaena. Yeah, it is, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That is her. Okay. So, let's see. Rhaena was born in 23 AC to Prince Aenys Targaryen and Lady Alicent Velaryon. Following Rhaena's birth, people suggested that her uncle Maegor would fall behind her in the line of succession, which was one of the things we were talking about as being an issue for him and for Visenya. Let's see. So she was the eldest and at the time the only child of Aenys, heir to the throne. The next year, Queen Visenya suggested the betrothal between her son Maegor and Rhaena in order to settle the succession issue. Rhaena's parents and the High Septon protested the match. The High Septon instead suggested Cerise Hightower, who I said was the first bride to Maegor. Now, what I thought, I was trying to see if this was a difference between the Sons of the Dragon and Fire and Blood. She has several like companions growing up. She is, they're like, I don't know. It seemed kind of suggestive, like that she might be in love with these other female companions. Did you get that at all when you were reading?
Yeah,
it was
right. It's implied. It's definitely implied.
Yeah. I just wondered if you got that. I think it's pretty neat actually. I mean, it's real subtle, and you know, but it was sort of like she was like obsessed with like, oh gosh, just like pets and animals and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then she gets her dragon, you know, and that's sort of, you know, then she becomes less shy. But it, yeah, they make a real emphasis on just sort of, you know, how she wasn't as interested in men. So
right.
I thought that was pretty neat. So she's, you know, she's a cool character, and she actually becomes sort of a big, you know, deal later on with in regards to Maegor's reign, you know. So he kind of covets her. And she ends up becoming one of the Black Brides. So, but we'll come back to her in a second. I think we should probably finish up maybe Aenys, you know, his reign. He only reigned for 5 years, didn't he?
Yeah, he has a pretty short reign. He has to deal with some uprisings. Then he also, his biggest issue is with Maegor, right? When he has to exile Maegor.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of with, you know, he Maegor wants to remarry. Mm-hmm. And Aenys is kind of working with, he's working with the Faith, and the Faith gets upset, and so he has to exile him to Essos, and he takes Blackfyre with him when he goes to Essos, and that's when Maegor it is said that Aenys requested that his brother return Blackfyre, to which Prince Maegor replied, "Your grace is welcome to come and take it from me."
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's not happening, right? You know. Mm-hmm. That's something. Well, and cool thing also about Maegor, though, was that, you know, he was actually sort of made fun of at one point by some of his kin, that he had not taken a dragon yet. And he basically said, there's only one dragon who was worthy of me. So you mentioned Balerion. And upon Aegon's death, he actually finally does claim his dragon, you know. So, and then, it, as you said, was given Blackfyre. And so for a while, all is looking good. Aenys is going to do his thing and is trying to get all these other lords to like him and everything. It's like one of the things that really pushes Aenys over. Doesn't he marry his daughter to his son?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the big marries Rhaena to Aegon. And so, you know, that was where the Faith really started to kind of step in and say, you know, that's not good. That's incestual. It's against the gods. It's an abomination.
Right, because it says it says like those two are fond of each other like from the get go.
Yeah.
And so. and the High Septum is like, well, why don't you have your son marry my niece, right? Who's a High Tower.
So, but now back to what you were saying with the exile of Maegor, though, right? Yeah, he declares that Ceres Hightower is barren, you know, and that she's not able to give him children. And so he tries to go for Lady Alyssa Haraway. Haraway?
Yeah.
I can never say it right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but he's unable to kind of, you know, put his first wife away, I guess, is the way to say that. And, you know, so he gets all kind of upset, and the king doesn't, and he's is trying to keep, yeah, I mean, he's got his own issues with the faith, you know, but he's not able to kind of win this for Maegor, and actually kind of ends up, that's what he exiles him for, you know. So, yeah, he says right here, so feeling he had no other option, Aenys fiercely gave Maegor a choice, set Alyssa aside, or go into exile for 5 years. And so he actually ends up like taking her as his other wife, as a second wife, and he will not set her aside, and does go into exile. So, and it's during that exile that Aenys actually dies.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and so then he, you know, so then what happens? That is where creates kind of the real turmoil that we see in this Sons of the Dragon chapter, or if you read the novella, because the line of succession should go to one of Aenys, you know, sons, or at this point even firstborn. But what happens is Queen Visenya goes and gets Maegor, and Maegor comes back proclaiming himself king. And who is the Maester or the Septim? Oh God, what was that guy's name again?
The Septon?
The High Septon. Yeah, and then Maegor basically, you know, cuts him down and says, "Well, who's going to challenge me now?"
When he comes back to claim it, he does kill the High Maester, I think, the Grand. Right here.
When she returned, this Prince Maegor was with her on Beleriand. Maegor descended on Dragonstone only long enough to claim the crown, not the ornate golden crown Aenys had favored, with its images of the seven, but the iron crown of their father. There's that thing again. Set with its blood red rubies. His mother placed it on his head, and the lords and knights gathered there, knelt, and proclaimed himself proclaimed himself Maegor of House Targaryen, first of his name, king of the Andals, the Rhaenar, and the First Men, protector of the realm. Only Grand Maester Gawain dared object. By the laws of inheritance, laws of the conqueror himself had affirmed after the conquest, the Iron Throne should pass to King Aenys' son Aegon, the aged maester said. The Iron Throne will go to the man who has the strength to seize it, Maegor replied, whereupon he decreed the immediate execution of the Grand Maester, taking off Gawain's old gray head himself with a single swing of Blackfyre. Queen Alyssa and her children were not there on hand to witness King Maegor's coronation. She had taken them to Dragonstone within hours of her husband's funeral, crossing to her lord's father's castle on nearby Driftmark. When told, Maegor gave a shrug, then retired to the chamber of the painted table with a maester to dictate letters to lords great and small throughout the realm.
I mean, he actually has a couple different trusts, so that's one of the issues that he has. I mean, did you mention the bit about Visenya and Aenys and how and the role that she might have played in his death?
No, I didn't, sorry.
Okay, so I just wanted to state that really quickly, just that, like, you know, once he had kind of had fallen ill, you know, like there are some who say that it was implied that she might have had something to do with his death as well, to sort of hasten back, you know, her son. So,
right.
So there's that. But, you know, the other bit that happens here too, all of Aenys' Kingsguard, right, are over at Dragonstone with him when he dies. And I think I have to look really quick. Aegon and Rhaena are, they end up getting in trapped somewhere. They're a little bit spread out. I think they were doing sort of that the king's oh, I always forget what it's called, like the King's Progress or Procession,
yeah,
where he kind of goes around. Yeah, they had stepped in and kind of done that, you know, for their father. And when Magor comes back, he also is facing an issue with the Faith, right? The Faith Militant are there as well, and he has to kind of settle this, I don't know, they've come to kind of challenge, you know, him, right? So it's, isn't the Warrior's Sons or something like that?
Yeah,
I think?
Yeah, exactly. And they basically have, is it a trial by, no, it's not a trial by seven. It is a trial by seven. Yeah. Right here. So the Warrior's Sons were not slow to accept her challenge. Down from the hill of Rhaenys, they rode 700 knights in silvered steel, led by their grand captain, Sir Daemon Morrigan, called the Daemon the Devout. Let us not banty words, Magor toward him. Swords will decide this matter. Sir Daemon agreed. The gods would grant victory to him whose cause was just, as he said. Let each side have seven champions, as it was done in Andalus of old. Can you find six men to stand beside you? For Aenys had taken the Kingsguard to Dragonstone, and Magor stood alone. So Magor just turns to the crowd says, "Who will stand beside his king?" And the first one is this guy Dick Bean, who's a simple man at arms, and says, "I've been a king's man since I was a boy. I mean to die a king's man."
That's pretty awesome.
And unfortunately, that's really cool. What happens, old Dick Bean. But still, it's sweet.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, he definitely, yeah. Well, because Magor is like the only one who survives, right? I mean,
right? Yeah. So then other knights step forward, and then Magor chooses them, and they fight the seven, and so, yeah, Dick Bean dies first, cut down by Lyle Bracken, and then I think Magor is the only one who lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He is. That's when he goes into that coma for a little bit, right?
Yep.
Doesn't he get?
Then he kind of goes into a coma for 27 days. Magor lingered at the point of death, whilst maesters treated him with potions and poultices, and septons prayed above his head in the Sept of Remembrance.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh man, yeah. I'm just looking.
And then what happens is after is a ship arrives from Pentos. It's carrying two women and 600 sellswords. Alice of House Harway, Magor Targaryen's second wife, had returned to Westeros, but not alone. With her sailed another woman, a pale, raven-haired beauty known as Tyanna of the Tower. Some say that she is Magor's concubine, or that she's Lady Alice's paramour. But she's definitely. Some people say she's kind of like a sorceress, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, she definitely was dabbling in some sorcery. I feel like, you know, since she was such a warrior, you know, as she got older and she wanted to kind of keep that prowess, you know, that power of being able to, you know, move against different foes or whatever, she would turn to like the dark arts, you know, because it seems like, anyways, I mean, she was pretty good with the sword. She had Dark Sister, right? I mean, she was no slouch, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So, now there's just so much more. There's actually almost, there's more with Magor in this short time than there is with Aenys, to be quite frank.
Absolutely. So, Magor definitely has his own struggles as well as a king. Obviously, the biggest thing he does is, constructing King's Landing, right? Magor's Holdfast, the Red Keep, and he puts in a bunch of secrets, as we talked about, you know, before in his chapter in World of Ice and Fire, and then he like kills all the men who, you know, help architect the castle, so that only he would know the secrets of the castle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, correct. Yeah, and so once that's, like after the Red Keep, then there's this whole bit back again, right, with the Faith. I mean, isn't this another issue where he?
Yeah, that's definitely a constant struggle for him.
Yeah, yeah, and he kind of, I mean, one of his decrees too was that these warrior sons, these poor fellows and whatnot, that they weren't allowed to carry weapons. He tries to disband the Faith Militant in a sense. And he ends up having to go, you know, to Old Town, heading to the Starry Sept, and he wants to basically he's going to take out the High Septon, but you know he ends up dying, and one of the High Towers is able to save the city because they just open the gates and they elect a new High Septon to kind of say, you know, they anoint him, you know, and all is well, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. which is good. So. So he remains there for half a year, presiding over the trials personally. So there was some issue. Again, this is some of the warrior sons and those who opposed the king and who were, you know, speaking ill of him and trying to rise against him. He's even placing bounties on people's heads and mm-hmm. what have you. So
well, he kills Prince Aegon. He has a fight. He has a fight. He's on. Is it Quicksilver? Is that the dragon that he is on?
I know his mother's. I think you might be right.
And then that's where he gets the title. Yeah. So King Maegor had come for the first time since the doom of Valyria. Dragon contended with dragon in the sky, even as a battle was joined below. Quicksilver, a quarter the size of Beleriand, was no match for the older, fiercer dragon. Then the black kind of descends upon it on from above, and yeah, kills Prince Aegon, who's kind of leading his own kind of he's part of this uprising against Maegor, which is something Maegor is constantly dealing with. And in all of these struggles and stuff like that, then like immediately after this, kind of Visenya dies. He kind of is led into a depression. And then that's kind of ultimately what.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say I think his mother Visenya was actually the one pushing him quite a bit to kind of be who he was. I mean, I think you know maybe he also always felt like it was his right to kind of rule as well, but some of that is from his upbringing or what people were whispering in his ear. And she was a main, you know, contributor to that. And I just kind of feel like, you know, after she dies and then he doesn't have any children, right? Or they're stillborns or there's, you know, various things happening there. He's that would be one of the reasons why he was in that state, you know, of mind. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not liked. I mean, like it even says early on in his early life, I mean, he didn't really have a friend at all, did he?
No.
You know?
No, the only friend he really ever had was his brother. And then they kind of turn to it. So, so anyway, so this is just kind of a broad kind of overview of this chapter. It's really big. We did a super detailed breakdown of it in our Patreon. We did like a 3-part mm-hmm. breakdown. So it's like, I think it's 3 hours. What we did roughly of a piece section by section breakdown. Mm-hmm. of this. And we've covered
because the bit that's hard to cover is all of the brides, mm-hmm. you know, because that's yeah. what we've got to a point here where, you know, basically, you know, upcoming, you have the black brides. He's still without child in 47 AC, you know, he ends up never being, you know, I mean, they get with child and there's some people faking that they have children. Mm-hmm. One of his wives is so desperate to have a child that she's like, her father's like handpicking, you know, men who have fathered children, you know what I mean? So we know they're fertile and stuff like that. And they're all like gruesomely killed. He gets what? I mean, doesn't he get enwrapped with like a sorceress of some kind, right? Whatever her name is. I can't remember her name, but you know, it's, just awful. So,
yeah.
So anyways, yeah, it's kind of a mess for a while there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, and then Maegor, you know, when he dies, I mean, he's sitting on the Iron Throne. Some people are don't know whether he was murdered, if he killed himself.
Oh yeah, sure. Yep. There's all of that as well. You know, because people were ready for his reign to be over. I mean, that was, you know, something that had been what was it plotted by some of his mistresses or some of, you know, his wives. That's, mm-hmm. that was actually still left a mystery in this as well, you know, so, which is good, I think. You know, there was no, I didn't get anyways any indication one way or the other as to whether that had been solved. Did you?
Right. No. And we talked about this before. It's still definitely kind of a mystery. Because, you know, his wrists are slit, but there's also part of the Iron Throne is going through his neck. So it's like, that seems like that one would be kind of hard to do in order if you were trying to kill yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's weird because like it all like his guards are outside, right? And
right.
No one really sees anyone come in or out.
Right. But there's secrets, you know, secret passageways and stuff that only he should know. So, you know, I guess it seems to reason that somebody else would have would either know a secret or perhaps maybe you do like a shadow type thing that happened with Renly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, you know, the other thing too is I was thinking like it would be great irony if like he tried to get all of those people who helped create the Red Keep, you know, killed. He killed off all of the masons and the people who helped build it and knew those secret passageways, if their son or if someone, you know, survived.
Right.
You know, and this was like them sneaking in, killing the king.
Yeah, I would love if that was actually what it was, if we ever finally got that it was just some random person. And there is precedent in it because, you know, you just in the way that Gurr kind of writes, you know, like you already have this kind of that Dick Bean character who, you know, stands up and fights with Maegor, you know, this who's the first person to do it, just a common man. And it would be interesting if that was ultimately how he died, was just a, you know, a commoner or something was the one who's killed him.
Yeah, for sure. So he ends up with something interesting about Maegor, rules for 6 years and 66 days and died without issue, right? So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Right.
He's succeeded by his nephew, King Jaehaerys Targaryen, the youngest son of the late King Aenys the First. So we shift back to Aenys, you know, line. And so that's, you know, we'll be talking about the old king soon. But yeah, so that was kind of the end of his. There's a lot more. There's a lot of minutiae. There's a lot of little tiny details. Some of the inconsistencies that Gurr has kind of wrapped up are like the naming of houses. A couple of dates were corrected. What else was fixed here? Different houses were in the wrong place. So clearly So he's just kind of correcting some of these things. It's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, you know, there's
all different little tiny houses.
There's
stuff,
a lot.
So
yeah, it's a super thick chapter, if you want to call that. Now that it's in Fire and Blood, I mean it was an entire novella, right? So that's So all right, well, let's go ahead. I think we should move on over to the reread.
Yeah, because we could spend about another hour and a half.
Well,
on
we could
that,
spend 3 hours on it because we did that once.
We've
so.
Done it.
Yeah, we've done it. So, yeah, if you want the super detailed breakdown of Sons of the Dragon, yeah, Sir Ezra and I did that. It's part of our Black Council series on our Patreon, and it's like 3 hours long. So,
I mean, it's kind of neat that we did that beforehand too, and we don't really. Like, this is a bit of a refresher, and this is some of that was refresher for folks who have been with us since the beginning. But like, I don't really feel like we, you know, I listened to the whole thing again, and like you, I was trying to find little tidbits where things have been changed, and I didn't find a whole lot, if any at all. To be quite, I mean,
right.
I was really just listening to. I didn't go back and like compare the text, so I'm sure there is some differences and there's changes or things that were left out, but I don't have the time to compare it to Sons of the Dragon. So I thought I would just listen to it and see what I got. And it just, you know, relatively told me the same thing. What I'm interested in the upcoming weeks is sort of the old king, you know, Jaehaerys.
Yeah, because this is going to all be new, totally new information. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, be assured that we'll read some passages from that. And those are the ones we really want you to kind of hone in on and read with us and see what we can figure out.
So. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, this week we are into Tyrion 6, but recap from last week was Jon 5. Sir Alistair announced he was passing 8 recruits, including Jon, into the Night's Watch. There's a celebration, but Jon realizes that Sam will not survive without the others to protect him. John asked Maester Aemon to allow Sam to become his steward, since he can read, write, and do sums. The last time we were with Tyrion, in Tyrion 5, Tyrion was held captive in one of the Eerie Sky Cells. Eventually, he had bribed the jailer Maud to take a message that he is ready to confess his crimes. When brought into the High Hall, Tyrion manages to convince Lady Lysa Arryn to give him a trial by combat, and the sellsword Bronn declares he will be Tyrion's champion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, also, he doesn't just declare he'll be Tyrion's champion, he fights Ser Vardis and beats him. So,
right.
Yeah. So this time we are with Tyrion 6. Tyrion and Bronn make camp on the high road. Tyrion wants to make a fire, but Bronn protests that it will bring the Vale Mountain clans down on them. Tyrion sees no point in trying to avoid the clans, and Bronn gives in. As Tyrion plans, the Stone Crows arrive, and Tyrion negotiates an agreement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you, so, like, the last couple chapters, the last two Tyrion chapters are some of the best, like, character building.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, absolutely.
Like, this is not a character who you thought really has a chance, and is, he really goes, he rises above all the odds, you know? And it's just impressive, you know? And actually, Bronn and he talk about that in this chapter as to how, yeah, like, how did you know? How did you know is going to step up for you? And
yeah.
Tyrion's just like, I'm rolling the dice. But he's also rolling the dice knowing that he's got, like the odds are good in some way or another. You know what I mean? It's like, he says it's random chance. It's not, really. I mean, he does actually roll them when it's good for him, you know? So this is two times in a row where he's going to do something like that, that really shows his intelligence and really shows us that, like, you know, where his skills are, I guess, is the way to put it. So it's what makes him awesome. You know, it's also what, like, you know, you have evidence that he can kind of talk his way out of this. Well, he can talk his way out of anything, you know, I mean, seemingly. It becomes harder as he goes into Essos and different places. But, wow, that's really my big takeaway from like, this chapter and the last one. So
Yeah, absolutely. In this chapter specifically, we get Tyrion's kind of backstory on his wife, and it also gives us a little bit more insight to his father, right, and Jaime a little bit. But I think it's more kind of focused to set up just how kind of bad Tywin is, right, and how kind of cruel Tywin Lannister can be,
right.
And this goes down almost the same way it goes down in the show. It's interesting. They still have this scene, right, where Tyrion is explaining Tysha, and it's the same story. They just kind of move it, and you know, they move it to later, to where Tyrion is in the camp when he meets Shay for the first time.
Right.
He, Shay, and Bronn are hanging out drinking before the battle. And he tells it then, and Bronn actually says the same thing. Like, you know, I would kill the man who did that to me, in the show. So they just kind of move it. And I think it's kind of cool both ways. Actually, when I think about it, I think it's cool that it's kind of this, as readers, once we get it, we get it. It doesn't necessarily need to be a moment with someone like Shay. But in the show, I think it is kind of cool, because that way it's where we can already see, by doing it there, you can kind of skip a lot of that Tyrion and Shay kind of opening up stuff, since he automatically just kind of immediately it kind of opens up to her. And so that's you know, stuff you have to do in film to save time, because you're obviously much more limited. So I think it's cool both ways. But I also like the way they do it here. Where he is just kind of telling Bronn, sitting around this fire, right?
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
And the story's the same both way in the show and the books. And it's kind of crazy, you know. It's really to me this chapter is two parts, right? You have that backstory, and then the stuff with the Stone Crows, right? So you have Tyrion and Bronn, and they're walking on the high road, and Tyrion wants to make a fire and camp, and Bronn's like, no, you know, we're gonna
terrible idea.
Bad idea. We're gonna bring the mountain clans on us, and Tyrion kinda has a plan.
Right.
And so so for you, Sir Ezra, I guess my question is, do you think Tyrion wanted the mountain clans because he was planning on going and meeting up with his father and bringing them to fight with him? Or do you think he just, or do you think he was just like, no, I'll promise them this and then we'll just be able to make it through?
Yeah, well, I think what's unexpected as he moved forward, I don't know that he thought they were going to, you know, like it's the going with him type of thing. Like they have to go with him. He can't be out of their sight.
Right.
You know what I mean? Cause he kind of tells Mord, you know, like show back up at my door whenever, when you're done serving here and tell him what happened, mention my name or I'll pay you the rest of your gold. So, you know, yeah, maybe he thought they would follow him to a certain extent, somewhere where he could, I don't know, like a loyal, someone who was loyal to House Lannister and he could fill their,
right,
you know, armory. But I don't know that he actually thought they were going to go all the way with him or that he had that intent. I think he did just want to kind of talk his way out of this. You know, he wanted to draw them in and use his words and yeah, because they're really like they're whistling the song, as you said, like when we get into Taisha, it's like he's whistling that song that was sung, that brings back this memory, you know, when he first hooked up with his wife, you know, he's been married.
I mean, yeah, he has.
Tyrion has been married at 13. I wanted to say real quick though, one thing that I thought was interesting is I, like you, am so glad that this happened with Bronn, and just Bronn. You know, just because it shows, like, that's a story that Bronn knows. It's this side of Tyrion that is just, it's an awful, awful story. I mean, we all feel for him. We all, like, want to help him kill his father, you know, for this, which is terrible. But, I mean, that's what we want because it's such a terrible thing. So we'll get into that story and talk about why it's so bad. But yeah, I don't know. I was just happy he had this moment, you know what I mean? Because it builds this relationship, this bit of trust, I guess, or something between the two. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, even though they talk about not having a love for each other, which as we start, that's how the chapter starts, is that, like, don't forget, Dwarf, you know, I don't love you. You know,
right. I'm here for the money.
For the money, for the gold. And that's where Tyrion kind of asks him, like, you know, what is it that you want? Is it lordship? Is it women? Is it gold, you know, and all those things. And he talks about how he knew that Bronn had no good reason to go with Lady Catelyn other than for gold. And then she doesn't reward him with gold. And so as he's thinking through stuff at the Vale, it's sort of like, well, that guy's disappointed. He's definitely disappointed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
because what he thought he was going to get from Lady Catelyn, he's not getting. She's not pressing a couple, you know, silvers into his hand because she's thinking this is an honorable thing to do. This is what, you know, knights and hedge knights and you know, these men do. Sworn swords. And he's not. He is a sellsword. So yeah, he uses that to his advantage. And they kind of talk about that as to what Bronn wants, you know, going forward and what the deal is. So the bit about the fire, yeah, that's where you start to kind of see that Tyrion has a plan. He's not an idiot. He does know that making a fire is going to draw the mountain clans in, and he really to kind of escalate this once this happens sooner rather than later. You know, because sometimes I almost wonder if they track you for a little while, they see that you're trying to sneak through their land, and then they come down on you hard. But he just very much openly, you know, come join us by the fire, you know.
Yeah.
We get to that,
and I think it's a smart thing to do, right? Because if you try and run from them, you're two people, right? Like
Yeah.
And Tyrion kind of challenges them, right? Like, you wouldn't be saying this to the Knights of the Vale, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly, yeah. Well, and that's his whole bit. And we'll just talk about, let me see, is there any, oh, yeah. So on that point, so 2 points. He starts to mock their armor, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, he's really playing them. He's master of words and definitely plays them. One thing before that starts, though, that's kind of neat is Bronn. Forgot about this. I totally, when I was doing the reread, this stuck out to me, which was Bronn actually kills Chiggin, companion, because he was moaning and bringing the mountain clans, you know, down on him. And it was just sort of like he was going to die anyways. I just made it quicker and shut him up, you know, so he's a ruthless guy. I mean,
absolutely,
you know.
And
he's a survivor.
And Bronn's also a character. In the show, they don't kind of portray him as kind of ruthless as he is in the books. In the show, he's almost more of kind of like a not like a comedic character. He kind of is a little bit, but it's kind of that like, it's like that low kind of crude humor, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't know. Braun's not making, he's not making witty japes, right? He's,
right.
Yeah.
He reminds me of like a darker Han Solo. You like a dark side.
Yeah.
Han Solo,
yeah.
Like someone who's,
yeah.
Cause he's got that scoundrel type of feel, mm-hmm. you know, to him, but yet he's a ladies man, you know, hooking up with the ladies and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But yeah, I get what you're saying though. Cause in the books, he's a little bit more, especially here at the start, we'll warm up to him and there'll be some kinder moments later. But I mean, you know, he is just a ruthless killer. I mean, and where you start to see his character kind of develop is him laughing and talking and jeering and jiving with Tyrion. You
right.
know, that's really where he thinks the dwarf is funny and that he's bold. You know, and he's just sort
right.
of like, "Gosh, I cannot believe the tongue you have." It's just he's mesmerized by it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
he has respect for him because of it. So
yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I'm thinking of a scene in the show. Just talking about Bronn's character. So in the show, in the books, when Jaime's training right to use his other hand, he trains with Sir Ilyn Payne so no one can hear him, right? But remember, yeah. in the show, it's Bronn, and Jaime asks Bronn, you know, is this an okay place to train? And Bronn's like, well, I bring this. I can't remember who it is, this, you know, guy's wife down here, and she squeals like a pig and no one's come down yet. So, you know what I mean? Like that's the type of character. So in the show, he is a little bit kind of more like lighthearted, you know, kind of a character. But in the, cause in the show, we don't find out that he was, I'm pretty certain we don't find what he didn't like kill Chicken cause Chicken wasn't really there. Right. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's yeah. not like something that he does in the show.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, it's just neat to kind of look at the differences, you know, between the two and to watch this character develop, because we do really like him from the show, and I even like him in the book.
I do too. You know? Both ways I like him, and I think both ways a lot of people like him. I think that's, you know, we've definitely had a lot of theories and questions about him in the past, and it seems like a lot of our listeners and stuff are fans of Bronn.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gurr starts with a name and he kind of mm-hmm. builds off of it, right? So you've got Bronn, right, the name, and it's like I think, you know, I don't know, like because I know that characters grow on him, and I think this is one of those characters who just kind of kept evolving. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Because he just keeps gaining more and more ground and just getting, he becomes more and more a part of the story, and he just starts off as this sellsword who's like nothing, you know, mm-hmm. and teams up with a Lannister and just. Boom, there we go, and you know, rubbing elbows with everybody.
Yeah.
So they end up getting the goat, right? They get the goat and they start eating a bit, and, mm-hmm. and Tyrion is the one who kind of says, like, you know, well, I think it's Bronn wants to, he'll take first watch, and Tyrion kind of knows, like, it won't be that long. You know, they'll be here in no time. So, yeah. So anyways, he's talking more and more about, now we gotta get to the story, right? Cause he starts to kind of whistle around the fire, doesn't he? And talk about, yeah.
Right. Yep.
The seasons of my love, right? Isn't that what it was called? Sweet and sad, the Mirish song
yep.
that he sings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, this story, man, it's sad, you know, I don't know. I really, Like the part that really stands out the most to me is when she's picking up the silvers.
Yeah.
You know? Gosh, man, he's sitting in the corner just watching. It's just awful, man. It's just like, what the heck, girl? I mean, like, there's worse things, but like I, you know, like, I'm with Bronn, man. Like, I would have killed that guy, you mm-hmm. know? Like, this is messed up. This is messed up stuff. So, anyways, you know, Do you want me to tell the story? Or you want to tell the story?
Yeah, you go ahead. I'm pulling something up that's from actual history that drew kind of an instant comparison to that. So I'm gonna pull it up here.
Okay, gotcha. So anyways, so as they basically, Tysha is this setup. I mean, you know, they're on the road. This girl comes out screaming, you know, into the roadway. Her gown is kind of torn in the back a little bit, and Jaime, you know. Jaime and Tyrion kind of rescue her, and you know, Jaime takes off after the scoundrels, and Tyrion is left with her, and she's kind of like, you know, crying, and he's there to protect her. So Tyrion's kind of like keeping her, protecting her, right? And he takes her to an inn where they kind of share a meal, they talk. The wine goes to Tyrion's head, and he's only 13 at the time, and he ends up finding himself in bed with her. So he, and this is, he's a virgin, she's a virgin, you know, it's this, they're both, I think, the same age, or, yeah, I think they are, maybe just less than a year separates them, and so he finds a drunken septon to kind of marry them, and they are man and wife for a fortnight. So they are together. The septon eventually kind of comes to his senses. He sobers, and he goes and he tells Tyrion about what's going on. And I think it was just sort of like if he didn't, you know, I kind of think Tyrion, or I'm sorry, Tywin would have, you know, probably done something bad to the septon if he wouldn't have come forward or told him about this or who knows what. But Jaime ends up having to kind of confess that the girl was actually a whore and that he set up the whole thing. And Tywin, you know, actually at one point brings in the girl and makes Tyrion sit in the corner while each of the guardsmen kind of paid her a silver to kind of take their turn. I mean, it's just, I don't know, like, I guess she really was, like, she had entered that profession and was ready to start working at a pleasure house of some kind. And then, you know, so they paid a lot for her and they set this whole thing up, and then but at the very end Tywin kind of gives Tyrion like the last go around, and he gives him this gold coin to give to her because Lannisters cost more. And the saddest part is when she's just trying to, she had so many silvers that she couldn't keep them all in her hands. I mean, she could barely hold them all, and they're spilling out on the floor, and I'm just like, it's such a terrible, it's just, I don't know, Sir Matt. It just, gosh, man, I just want to, like, I get upset for Tyrion, man. Like, it's just so crazy. And it's not that girl's, they're all, like, abused. This girl is completely, you know, I don't know, man. Like, how does she say no to the Lannisters? How does she, you know, turn Tywin down? How does she, right. All that stuff, right. You know? It just seems, that's just tough, I think.
Right.
And I don't know, man. It's upsetting, and I get all, like, those silvers just clanging on the floor, man. It just, mm-hmm. There's so many of them, and it's just
so
awful.
Right, so what it kind of reminded me of is, again, this is, I'm a history guy, so Roman history. I'm not entirely sure on the accuracy of this, but it is, you know, you go back, it's hard for records and stuff from those days. But Emperor Claudius, who was, I think he was the fourth emperor of Rome. Okay. So, you know, I kind of talked about that Augustus kind of comparison the other day with, mm-hmm. with, Aegon the Conqueror, right? Okay. So mm-hmm. Emperor Claudius is the fourth emperor of Rome. This is around like 40-ish, AD. So he, has a wife named, like Messalina or something like that. And, she like, was known for having this like crazy like appetite for, you know, hooking up. And there's like these just rumors and like stories and stuff like that she once had a 24-hour challenge against this prostitute to see who could bed the most men.
Wow.
Yeah, and that she won the competition with 25 partners.
Wow. Huh.
So I don't know why that's just kind of the first thing that kind of comes to mind. If you watch I Claudius, that's like a it's got who's it? Patrick Stewart's in it, and John Hurt plays Emperor Caligula and stuff like that, and it's great, yeah, but.
Man, I just, you know, like, here on Bend the Knee, man, it's just like, I don't know, sometimes it's the things we talk about, man, are just like...
I know, it's outrageous, yeah.
Like, it's outrageous, man. It's like, just so you guys know, this is like, Like, we're just going off with what's happening in the text, man. I mean, then we're making connections to history and stuff. Like, this is real life. This happens. Gurr is influenced by it. And that's why it's so fascinating, I think, to people, is because they know it does happen and these things are out there. And there's so, like, he doesn't have a lot of these moments where it's, like, super shocking like this. But there's enough that it's, like, it feels like real life, you know, because it's like you'll go for a while, like things are normal, and then it's like, wow, that's a shocking news story, or wow, I didn't know that happened in history, you know. And so you just totally enlightened me a little bit on some stuff that I did not know about. And I mean, we gosh, at one point we were looking up, you know, how old it, you know, one should be when they stop breastfeeding, you know what I mean?
Like, hey man, this is, you know,
this is the kind of things we have to talk about to get into the text. It just, it's wild.
Well, so I think it's well, you know, Gurr draws from a lot of.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying it's it's the text. I mean, it's why we love this series. It's just, it's nuts. It's unexpected. There's so many different things that happen that are just kind of like crazy. Because I mean, look at it like this. You know, the Lannisters. We don't like the Lannisters really kind of moving through this point. We don't really know whether we should be allies with them or not. We really are favoring the Starks.
I know. Well,
and stuff.
I know.
And then you get this chapter,
right? And yeah, and so it, well, it's so for right now, it seems like God, most of the Lannisters are bad, with maybe the exception of Tyrion. Tyrion seems like an okay guy. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
you know, I mean,
right.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes I have a House Lannister shirt that I wear. Sometimes people comment on it, like, the Lannisters. It's like, do you guys just forget about Tyrion, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a Lannister. Yeah. Well, and then also, Jaime grows on you very quickly, too, in this book and the next, you know? It's like, so, I don't know. There's that, but, oh, my goodness. All right, well, anyway, so there's the story of Tysha, and Bronn basically says,
and do you think that Tysha is ever going to come back? Do you think we'll see her at some point?
I don't know. I actually don't. I don't even know if there's any theories on her or anything. There might even be some. You know, people kind of crop up and they end up being different people and have different names.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's a Tysha theory actually out there. I'm gonna go look real quick.
Well, you know, and you know, to kind of spoil it like this is later. You know, we get some information that of some other people's perspectives on this. Right, like in, I think it's in A Storm of Swords where Jaime has a POV chapter and he's thinking about it, and he kind of confesses that she really actually wasn't a whore, she was a lowborn, right?
Oh yeah, well, yeah. Oh really? Okay. Wow. That's pretty cool.
In
A Storm of Swords.
Yeah, in A Storm of Swords, it's a Jaime chapter. Tyrion. No, it can't be a Tyrion chapter. It has to be a Jaime chapter. But it's right here. It says when Sir Jaime Lannister rescues his brother Tyrion from prison, he confesses that Tysha was no whore and that their father, Lord Tywin Lannister, thought the lowborn Tysha only desired the wealth of Casterly Rock. Tyrion realizes that Tysha had been genuinely in love with him, and he becomes furious with Jaime. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that is a Tyrion chapter, but it's at the end of Storm of Swords, right, when Tyrion is escaping, right? Like, Jaime's helping him escape.
Right, he's helping him get out.
He's helping him escape, and then, but the interesting thing about it, though, is that then Tyrion tells a lie to Jaime. So, was Jaime lying there, too? I don't think so. I think Jaime was honestly telling Tyrion the truth. Because...
Well, I don't know, because... Go ahead.
Well, because then... That's when he's asking Tyrion, did you do it? Did you kill Joffrey? Because they don't know who did. And Tyrion lies and says, yes, I did. You know, Tyrion lies to Jaime and tells him he killed him because Tyrion's so pissed about everything. And Tyrion just killed, you know, Tywin. And so,
Yeah, it makes me think, though. I don't know.
Or he's like, about Jaime, to go kill Tywin. I can't remember if that conversation, off the top of my head, if it happens before or after.
Right. Yeah. But the whole Jaime bit,
it is before. Yeah. Jaime helps him out.
And then he goes
and finds Varys and says, "Hold on a second, I'll be right back." And he goes and kills.
Right.
He goes and kills Tywin. Yeah.
Yeah, he leaves Varys for a sec. Yeah. But Jaime, I think Jaime might have, he either could have been lying or telling the truth, actually. I mean, it probably seems like most folks believe he's telling the truth there and kind of making this confession before his brother leaves and he doesn't see him again, or he's saying something, you know, kind to his brother.
Because he thinks he's never going to see him again. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that, you know, so. But yeah, that's a good question as to whether she'll ever show up again or whatever. Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. I was just doing some more digging on here, trying to find some theories, but yeah, I haven't really seen anything yet other than him recounting it, you know, to Sansa. And then, as you said, yeah, there's a bit about Tyrion just remembering it when he's with Shay at one point, too. So, yeah, anyways, okay. Well, we'll dive back into that later and see what we can find. Or if you guys have any thoughts or theories on Tysha, mm-hmm. Let us know, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, so.
Kind of a sad story, but.
Yeah, so. All right, well, Sir Ezra, I think we're over here on to send a raven.
Yeah, just real quick to wrap up the chapter, just that, you know, he meets the Mountain Clan.
Right,
and yeah. And basically, yeah, they actually end up coming out, and he promises them the veil and all that cool equipment. So.
Right.
End yep. of story, real mm-hmm. short. Yeah, so. Yeah, on to send a raven, my friend. Let's see, so what do we have here? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the show was brought to you by Maglum the Westward Warlock, right? So it's mm-hmm. actually our friend Liam here. So the truth cuts deeper. And he sends us his raven. This is his first raven, so we thought we'd play it, a recent patron. So he says, a fond greeting to my lords Ezra and Matt. I am somewhat a new listener to the podcast, and I am currently working on catching up to you two. I'm around episode 25 right now. And I am very much enjoying the show. On a side note, I am deeply sorry for not currently being a patron. Ah, but he is now, so we're good.
Yeah,
yeah. Don't worry about that. Yeah, we know people. We have people listening who can and who can't, and some who come and go and never worries. That is
nope. Yep.
You know, man the wall as long as you can, and if you can't, no worries. There's some cool rewards there for folks. But he says an interesting thought occurred to me when listening to your episode on Azor Ahai, when Azor Ahai stabbed Nissa Nissa in order to create Lightbringer. It is said that her cry of pain and ecstasy caused a crack to form in the moon. This immediately caught my attention as it reminded me of Doria's story on the origin of dragons.
Mm-hmm.
In her story, the moon had a twin which hung in the sky, but it cracked open like an egg upon wandering too close to the sun. This ushered the dragons into the world. The similarity between both stories is causing the moon to crack. As a great power, one that can defeat the others, seemed to stand out to me. And I was wondering what your thoughts are. Is there something more to these stories of the moon in relation to the others, or is it more so linked to how common celestial influences are in Essos folklore and the faith?
Hey, that's a great question, because I remember when we hit that chapter, we were looking it up, and I was trying to find... something, because this is one of the only like Essos stories we get that is about these dragons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can remember, this is the only time we actually hear like this story about the dragons, right, in the moon. I don't believe it is brought up anywhere else, in terms of like dragons and the moon.
Okay, yeah. I don't remember myself, but I can do a quick look here. Yeah, I think it's... So part of it is just like this... let me see if I can find it here. The similarity between the two, because, let's see, this ushered the dragons into the world. Let's see, Lightbringer...
Well, right, but so the... Yeah, so... Yeah, so the so. That her story, Dora's story is just about the dragons, right? That's where her dragons came from. There were two moons, one cracked open, and then the dragons came out.
Yep, and then enter Azor Ahai, the other story being connected.
Right, it's a similar thing that it caused cracks in the form of the moon. But you know, the thing I like about it is that. As I'm doing more and more research on Lightbringer and Azor Ahai, and you have the last hero, and you have the last hero, Azor Ahai, and the prince, you know, that was promised. There are some differences between these things, and some of these stories and prophecies may be connected, but that doesn't mean they're the same. I think with Azor Ahai and the prince that was promised, and the last hero, we view them all as one thing. I don't know if that necessarily is the case or has to be the case. And sometimes some of these prophecies get kind of blended and mixed together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's sort of what is happening, because if this is an Azor Ahai, you know, type of prophecy, and then you have the Dothraki, you know, telling their story as well. You know, they're both. I mean, again, that Azor Ahai prophecy comes from the east. You know, and so the Dothraki have a huge range there, you know, land, territory, where they kind of, you know, interact. So maybe they picked some of that up, you know, from the Far East. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's something that kind of got into their lore at one point, as you say. So it could be influenced, or, you know, kind of all intermixed a little bit. Because I think the interesting part here is that it's that cry of ecstasy is what broke the moon, you know. And then, again, you've got the Dothraki saying, well, it's the moon that cracks when it cracks. You know, so those two seem related, right? I mean, they that seems like a related story, you know, a telling. So no. I think it could come from both sides there. So
yeah, absolutely. And so I just they're all just slightly different. I'm trying to pull something up here. Somebody I had read, I think I have it saved on my computer, a Reddit link or something, where somebody broke down the three differences between them. And in one case, it's like, I want to say somebody used a song, right, to defeat them.
Okay. What, defeat the dragons?
No, not defeat the dragons, but like, say, like, defeat, like, their the who they were fighting, right? Like, whether it's the last hero or Azor Ahai or...
Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right. Oh, interesting. Yeah, so that, like, kind of like that loud cry, or that, because again, we're talking about a Song of Ice and Fire, so that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. And that, yeah, it's a good question. Now, the other bit here, too, so the other thought is that, similar to the story, causing the moon to crack as a great power, one that can defeat the others, seemed to stand out to me as I was wondering what your thoughts are. Is there something more to these stories of the moon in relation to the others? So how do we connect this to the others? And I think the way you do it is through that Azor Ahai, you know, R'hllor versus the great other type of discussion and battle, you know, there. So are they, it's interesting that the moon being kind of this, you know, symbolically, it's this cold, you know, night light, right? Right. That would crack and break, and then these fire creatures would come from it. So that's an interesting,
right?
You know, thing to think about, right? You know,
right. Well, there's all the theories that Dragonstone, like, right? So maybe perhaps Dragonstone cracks open, right? Maybe whether you use a horn or something like that, and that there are dragons inside Dragonstone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that's kind of part of that. That's kind of part of that theory too. Is that there you will awake dragons.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. Okay, the other question here, too, or is it more so linked to how common celestial influences are in Essos folklore and faith? And that could be just that looking at the stars, you know, kind of that they're out underneath the stars quite a bit. They're always kind of traveling. They're a moving, ranging, you know, group. And so, yeah, I think the stars would be something that they would see as you know, indicators or something that's godlike, you know, and they would try to derive a lot from what they see in the stars, or, you know, be a part of their telling. So it's a combination of both. I, you know, the relation to the others, it's a good question. It's really the whole, it's the whole story there, man. I mean, it's what we're all, the whole A Song of Ice and Fire is
right.
Talking about this question and answering, you know, some of that prophecy piece. And
right.
Then,
yeah. Well, you know, so, you know, also think about, you know, just think about the comet, right? And how so many people perceive the red comet, right? Joffrey, you know, the one we see in the main series, right? Joffrey thinks, oh, it's a sign of my, you know, me becoming king. You have Stannis, oh, it's, you know, time for me to be Azor Ahai and Lightbringer and all of that. And then you have Osha, you know, tell Bran it only means one thing, dragons, right? And so it happens, you know, around, you know, it happens when Daenerys brings the dragons back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah. So, I just wanted to point out here. This is from, this is John 2, A Dance with Dragons. And this is, I think, is that same chapter that is also, it's like Sam 3 or 4 in A Feast of Crows, right? But you get both their perspectives on it. I found one account of the Long Night that spoke of the last hero slaying others with a blade of dragon steel. Supposedly, they could not stand against it. So there we have this idea that the last hero, right, who some people think is Azor Ahai, maybe they're the same thing, slaying others, or the White Walkers, right, with a blade of dragon steel. It doesn't say a flaming sword, just as a blade of dragon steel, right, which is different potentially than dragon glass, because they, John goes on to question, he's like, I've never heard of dragon steel. Do you think they meant Valyrian steel? And Sam's like, I don't know. So, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's pretty neat. I think it could mean, too, that maybe, since there are so few Valyrian steel swords, that could be something. It could just be a Valyrian steel sword, you know, which is what we kind of see in the show, don't we? A little bit, you know, with when John is kind of fighting.
Yeah, John does kill one with Valyrian steel. Yeah, but it's Longclaw. It's, you know, and then we get into the whole theory is Longclaw. I am starting more and more to believe that. In the books, that Lightbringer is not a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm starting to think it may be something else. It doesn't have to be a sword. It can just be a weapon, or Lightbringer may be a person.
Yeah,
is what I am starting more and more to believe, Sir Ezra.
I like it, man. That's awesome. Well, we'll have to get into some of your green dreams and more of your research, you know, very soon. So, all right, guys. Well, I mean, that is our Raven for the week. So we'll kind of continue. This is, you know, honestly, Liam, you kind of hit on something that we've talked about in the past, and it's a conversation that's going to keep happening, and it's one we enjoy talking about, because it is sort of the whole, it's what everything's founded on, really. All this stuff is kind of, you know, in play here still. So, all right. Well, you can send those ravens to btkcast@gmail.com and send them away. We're still kind of stockpiling some ravens, and we'd like to get more. So if you've been thinking about sending one, now is the time. Definitely shoot us a raven. Even if you're behind, you're still kind of catching up. I mean, odds are, you know, it's, even if it is similar to other people's ravens, it's going to be something that we haven't, you might have a different angle that we can kind of take on it. We do the same thing when we read Reddit theories or when we read other people's, you know, thoughts. I mean, you know, it causes you to think about the text yourself, and it causes you to think about, you know, based on your own experiences, you know, what you were thinking as you were reading, make other connections or go a different route or what have you. So we call it the rabbit hole syndrome, but it's fun to get involved in.
Oh, so. Absolutely. So. All right, Sir Ezra, I think that is it for this week. As always, we want to thank you for playing A Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 43, Eddard 11.
Yep. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.
Thank you for watching.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.